Deus Ex threat over. Hello and welcome to Drunk Cast. It is Sunday episode. Sunday is not an episode. It's Sunday, April 6th. Sorry, we're recording, and it's episode 87th. And my stomach is empty because I was too intoxicated yesterday to have eaten or digest what I've eaten, if you catch my drift. But Al's stomach isn't empty.
That's right. I just had breakfast.
Asshole.
And I feel like getting rid of it because of your story.
Oh, nice. And so what was embedded in the... all right, you know, since it's just us two, I'm going to flip a coin. Tony is out today. He was studying for his exam, for his job. We wish him luck.
Good
and
luck.
Slunks is probably catching up with some much-needed sleep. So Alfred and I will take the reins and be sexy. Let's see. Flip a coin to see who goes first for what you've been playing. Do you want heads or tails?
I usually would go first since the host goes last anyway.
Yeah, but you always go first.
Well, there's no one else to go first at this time.
I know, but do you want to go first or do you want me to go first?
I don't mind.
Okay.
I'll go first.
Al's heads. I lost a coin, so whatever. Go ahead.
All right. This week I've been playing a lot of Phoenix Wright.
Objection!
I am now on the final case. That third case was a mother, man. That had to have been at least 7 hours.
Now, you've been IMing me about that, but that last case was 7 hours, and this is the one that's been going on for 9 hours?
Or
are you saying the last one must have been 7 to 9 hours?
The one I just did, the third case?
Oh, okay.
It must have been somewhere between 7 and 9 hours.
Okay.
It was insanely sick. And then the fourth case is actually kind of short because it's kind of like a prelude to the fifth case. There's actually 5 cases in this one.
Oh, okay.
And so I just started the fifth case. And, dude, this shit is really coming together right now. I'm like, God, this is nuts.
This is the one that spans all 3 eras of his career or something, right?
Actually, it's just the
like
before he became a lawyer and now, like after part two.
Okay, so you get to see what's her face, Mia.
Right, you get to
before she spoilers.
Yeah,
not saying anything,
before
but yeah,
she spoilers. Yeah, and then there's a lot of stuff like relating to what's going on now with the cases, like with case 2 and 3, that is reflected in the fourth case and in the first case, and though the first and the fourth cases are flashbacks. And then the fifth case, I would guess, I mean, since it's the last one, it's putting it all together, and it allows you to really get to know all of the characters for who they really are. It's really cool.
In bed.
In bed.
Like a fortune cookie.
Exactly. And let's see, what else did I play? I really didn't play anything else because I've had a really messed up week. This morning, though, I did play about 5 minutes of Star Tropics before I got frustrated because I didn't have patience to do the level I was on, which is the same one I was on before.
The game that slaps you on the wrist for being greedy.
Yeah. And,
stop being greedy!
It's something that requires very, very good like dexterity and aptitude for hopping platforms and dodging stuff. Play some Bonk's Revenge, which is always good to play for about
better
15
or worse
minutes.
Than the original Bonk. Because I heard that Bonk gets worse with each sequel, but I could have heard wrong.
It kind of does. Basically, the first one was like the best to me so far because it was just like my first impact with it. I mean, it was like 16, 17 years ago. God damn. Bonk's Revenge is like, excuse me, Bonk's Revenge is different. Like, it's the same kind of game, but it just doesn't feel the same, and the music is, like, completely butchered in this game. Ugh. But it still has the same kind of feel. Like, it has some of those songs from the first game that I liked, but they aren't really mixed well. if you could say it like that. It's like, why didn't they just use the original track? But who knows? I got through a couple of stages there. And what else did I do? I didn't really play Warcraft since Tuesday.
If Tony were here, he'd cheer.
Yeah, something like that.
But he's not, so he can't.
Oh, I played Prey for about an hour.
$5 Prey. $5 Prey. If anybody didn't know, Prey was $5 last weekend. And so if you didn't get it on Steam, then you didn't get it.
Yeah. Pretty cool. Pretty cool game. And I'm surprised it runs on my computer at a pretty stable frame rate of 30. But it's really good. I hope to get through it soon. But I probably will play it more when I get my new computer.
Yeah. I hear it's short, too, so you probably will be able to make some good headway.
Oh, good, good.
It's like one of those 6-7 hour deals.
Good. I like a short game nowadays.
With what Shane Bentenhausen calls vagina walls.
Vagina walls. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, you saw them now.
I kind of saw, yeah. It's really nasty. Yeah, I think I played some God of War 2. Also, I should say, since there's a sequel. I played some God of War. I'm like in the middle of Pandora's Temple. Actually, I think I'm close to the end of it. But I hadn't played it since the last time I talked about it, which might have been last week, so I'm not sure if I
played it. It was last week. Yeah, it was last week.
Yeah, I think I might have played it on Sunday night when I got home from work. Or
maybe
Monday, maybe. But I played Phoenix Wright mostly this week. I'm done. So what you been playing?
I finished... I'm about to hiccup here. Give me a second. Okay, maybe not. I finished Ninja Gaiden Dragon Sword on normal difficulty, and... Mm-hmm. I'm going to review it for this other website that picked me up, but I don't want to do that until I try to get through a good portion of it on hard.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is that hard opens up only after you beat it.
Right, of course.
And it's not necessarily a big problem. It's just that if you're a guy who's played Ninja Gaiden on Xbox and you're like, okay, I want the same kind of challenge on the DS version, you're going to have to go through it first. So your first experience isn't going to be with the difficulty level that you're used to, let's say.
Okay, right, exactly.
I think that's okay for people who have a DS and are just like, I've never played Ninja Gaiden, but this looks sweet.
Mm-hmm.
I think that for people who, you know, are expecting something, you know, they should have at least provided the option, but that doesn't diminish how insanely fun the game was.
Cool.
On hard difficulty, they start getting smarter. They start guarding more. So, like I was saying last week, the first parts of the game where all you really need to do is kind of slash away because your guy's so quick,
mm-hmm.
That doesn't really take water anymore, as much at least, because they're guarding a lot. So you gotta do the same thing you do in the Xbox version. You gotta wait till they strike you, strike at you, and block that in counterattack, or dodge roll out of the way and hit him in the back. And do stuff like that. So it becomes less of a slash fest and more of a kind of waiting and defensive and counterattacking type of thing, which totally rings true with the Xbox version. Now, the only boss battle I've gone through in hard so far is the first boss, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And the first boss is Ryu. And it's still the same thing. He just takes more damage.
Oh, okay.
So that's not as challenging, you know, but because the boss battles, I don't know if you've seen footage, for anyone who hasn't seen footage, they're in full 3D instead
really?
Of on the, yeah, instead of on the pre-rendered background, the boss battles are in full 3D and the view is kind of like a behind Ryu's back, not quite over the shoulder like in Gears, but you know, that similar type of third person view,
right?
Where the camera's always pointing forward. So you basically, you know, when you move left and right, you're actually circling the guy.
Okay.
Unless you specifically tap in the corner of the screen, then you're circling away. Then, you know, you're running away. But, you know, you're usually circling the guy. And I guess there's no real way that they could have made it that difficult without being overly cheap in that point of view, because you're using the stylus and, you know. So the bosses end up being kind of easy. You can like kind of run towards the screen, meaning run away from the boss, like directly back, and then just pelting them with shurikens. Or your bow and arrow, and they'll come charging towards you, and then you can just like kind of roll out of the way and hit them in the back. But sometimes it's just a matter of learning to recognize. It's like kind of like Zelda in that you just learn to recognize when they're going to do a certain attack. When a dragon's going to breathe fire on you, he'll rear his head back, and so you know to jump. Yada, yada, yada. They don't guard very much, actually, if at all, which is weird. So,
The bosses.
Yeah, it's strange. You think that the bosses would be the ones that are, like, the hugely challenging ones, but no, not in this case.
Yeah, usually, I guess, in Ninja Gaiden, it's like the path to the boss is what's hard.
Yeah.
Now let's see if you can survive the boss, because you say he's got more HP now.
Yeah. There's nothing like even the first nunchuck guy in the Xbox Ninja Gaiden. Like, when you first get up to him, like, if you... I don't know. This is me, okay? Mm-hmm. And I suck, so... But when I first got to him, like, he pounded my ass, like, two or three times. And when I beat him, I was left with only, like a fifth of my life left, because he had smashed me so much. And in this one, it's like, maybe you die once, and then you get the picture, and then you beat the boss.
And you come back in. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I've only died on maybe two or three of the 10 bosses, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, it's definitely not as... again, this is a normal difficulty, but it wasn't anything like the Xbox version. One thing that's kind of... Now, I haven't played through the entire Ninja Gaiden Xbox version, but one thing that strikes me is a little bit, I don't know what the good adjective for it is, but it just feels a little older and not as fluid. They go by a hub and spoke type of thing where it's like after every chapter, you get transported back to your hometown,
mm-hmm.
where you can buy your items and talk to the kids running around there and the other townspeople to get some, you know, little bits of story information out of there. And then you go back into a portal, which leads you to another portal to the next part of the game. So, you know what I mean? So it's kind of like you go and you come back, you go and you come back, you go and you come back. And it's kind of like their excuse to just kind of throw areas together. So it doesn't feel that organic.
Right. It just feels like quest hubby.
Right. Not that the original Ninja Gaiden ever felt that organic, because you were being teleported from area to area in that too, but it didn't present itself like a hub and spoke. And again, it's not a bad thing. It's just kind of, it feels a little bit old. But then again, you know, a lot of these games, including Ninja Gaiden, do a thing where you step into a room of enemies, the door's blocked off until you beat them all, and that's really old.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, what do I have to complain about there? But yeah, I mean, that's just something that I noted. It's nothing to do with the actual quality of the game. It still stands, you know, get this game. It took me a little bit over 7 hours to beat it on normal. And I've been hearing reports, most notably from the guys that 1UP on their show, that the hard mode would probably take around 12 hours. So that's a healthy game. And what's the dude? Well, I forgot the dude's name. Ryan, I think. Ryan O'Donnell. I'll just say Ryan from the 1UP show was like, if you get this game, give it to your little brother to play first, so he can beat it and unlock hard. Yeah, and then let your first experience be hard mode. But what else have I been playing? I've still been kind of tinkering with Sheeran the Wanderer, trying to abuse the warehouse system to power up a sword. So I noted this in my review, but basically what I'm doing is I'm taking a katana. I take it to a blacksmith in the town with the warehouse, get it upgraded. Then I take it back to the blacksmith in the earlier town, get that upgraded, and then take it all the way back to the other warehouse and store it in there, and then kill myself. And then the next time I go back to the warehouse, take the katana, go to the blacksmith, take it to the other blacksmith, get it upgraded, put it back in the warehouse, die again. So it keeps on getting plus ones, like, every time I go through it.
But doesn't it cost you to do it?
Yeah, it costs you money, but, I mean, on your way to the warehouse where it's being stored, because there's a warehouse in the beginning of the game, mm-hmm. and that's not where I put it.
Right.
I actually put it in, like, the third town down,
mm-hmm.
because it's easy enough for me to get down there now.
Okay.
Like, and throughout the time it takes for me to get to that third town, I will eventually accumulate enough gold and or enough items to sell off for gold. So.
And basically, you just dedicate all of those resources to upgrading this one sword.
Exactly. Yeah.
Cool. That doesn't sound like an exploit. I thought it was like an exploit you were trying to do. I'm like,
I mean, well, it is and it isn't. I mean, I'm pretty sure that they intend for you to do shit like that. Mm-hmm. But like, I'm not, you know, making the best of my time in the game world. I'm specifically going in so I could upgrade this thing and then die.
Right, I know.
So
it's not conventional.
Yeah. But yeah, and I've also been trying to make my way through Justice for All. Mm-hmm. The Phoenix Wright game, so I'm still a game behind you. I'm on the last case, but I haven't really played it that much. I literally must have opened it for about half an hour, mm-hmm. and then put it down in favor of Ninja Gaiden, and then with the intent of putting Ninja Gaiden down in half an hour, and then picking that back up, and I ended up beating the game.
Yeah, I'm sure.
So that's what Ninja Gaiden is like. It's like one of those types of games, like I was telling you about God of War, where it was just like you just go through it, and it doesn't really feel like anything, mm-hmm. because... long or short, all you know, all you're focused on is in the moment of just beating the shit out of all these dudes, and it's just fun, and you don't have any sense of like how long it's been taking, or wow, when is this game going to end, or wow, this is the last stage, it feels too short, or anything like that. You're just playing it, and you're loving it. Like you're just in the moment. You're just like, the only thing maybe you'll be wishing for is like, I wish I could cut this dude's heads off, and I wish there was blood in it.
But it's rated T.
Mm-hmm. It's rated T. Yet they have lady enemies whose boobs are only covered up by tattoos.
Ah, tattoos.
And they're devoid of nipples.
That makes it T.
Yeah.
You know, just you know, you can have the big bubblies, but no nipple, no areola, yeah. Or else it's a
areola. Oh yeah, what else was I playing? I was playing Half-Life 2 while summarily intoxicated yesterday.
Oh yes, yes.
Inebriated,
yes.
And I actually did pretty well.
Mm-mm-mm.
But anyway, that I think that's all I've been playing. So, Tony, what you been playing?
What?
I'm studying. Okay, he's studying. Let's move on to the news.
What's up, money?
Hey, Nico. What up, ladies?
So, where are you taking me?
Blink, check. Bots, check. Paper, check. That's how we roll.
Roman?
I'm freaking out, man. I'm being followed. I saw them.
Don't be ridiculous. You're being paranoid.
We're on to the news, and we're on to people talking shit about other people's games, or in this case, their own game on the system that's not theirs. So, we first come to our favorite from Game Life, Susan Arendtou.
Sony dismisses the appeal of extra GTA 4 content. Here's some bitch slapping going on.
Mm-mm.
She writes, though Microsoft would have you believe that its exclusive downloadable content for GTA 4 makes the 360 version more appealing, Sony Scott Steinberg says it's just not that big a deal. The way Steinberg sees it, GTA 4 is so enormous that most players will never feel the need for any additional content. Quote, I personally don't think there's going to be a huge percentage of folks who jump into downloadable content for another price when they're still playing through the core product, he told Game Daily. So despite the fact that Microsoft, quote, spent the GNP of several small Latin countries for the exclusive content, and that was a quote, that wasn't Susan, that was actually a quote. He says, I think most people will have the Grand Theft Auto experience on PS3 day and date, same core game, shipping on the 360. Skyenberg is in the spot where he says that the core version of GTA 4 will have more than enough content to keep players busy happily busy for a long time, but I think he's kidding himself if he believes that the majority of people only turn to downloadable content once they finish with the game. And this is a point that I've been making, or that I made in the email, and she makes the same one. Does he think everyone who bought Shivering Isles finished Oblivion first too? There you go.
Mm-hmm.
So that's all I have to say about that. What are your thoughts?
I feel the same way.
If you owned both systems and hypothetically you wanted GTA 4, which one would you get?
I would get the 360 one.
You get the 360 one?
Because if I was the kind to be playing, I would like to have the extra stuff. I mean, that's right. Just like, you know, if I'm going to get a game, I want to get the most value out of it. And if the most value out of it means throwing a couple more dollars to get some more stuff.
Right.
Yeah, more GTA. Core gamer.
Right. Let's see. I was talking about Shiren the Wanderer earlier, about it being a roguelike dungeon crawl. And then Wii is going to get Chocobo's Dungeon.
Mm-hmm.
Wii is a casual gaming system.
And, you know, they get a lot of these games. They're getting Baroque. And, you know, it's funny. Every time they talk about Baroque, it's like, for all you hardcore dungeon crawler gamers.
And then every review is like, 3 out of 10!
Yeah, but I think it's because, you know, it's a niche game, so it's not really a game that people are gonna review and say, "Oh yeah, this game is great," blah blah blah. Like, I'm probably gonna get it, and I'm going to understand that yes, dying is something that is a part of the game, and it's going to open up the game.
Yeah,
not something to be frustrated about.
Yeah, I had to ding Shirin kind of for that. I mean, I ended up giving it a 6.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not something that I was happy about doing, because I personally enjoy it, but I can't just go out and say, you know, you really should like this. You know, dying's a part of it, and like, if you can't get that, then, you know, that doesn't mean that's a bad game. No, it's a type of thing where it's like, it does what it sets out to do really well, but what it sets out to do in the first place isn't necessarily that enjoyable for most people. You know, it's like this is the best manure pile shoveling simulator ever. But do you want to pile manure?
Pile manure. Shovel.
Pile it. Pile sounds disgustinger.
It
does. Piles. Piles. Pile.
Yes, I completely agree. And that's why the ding is definitely justified. It's something that, you know...
It's going to frustrate a lot of people.
But if you were writing for a hardcore site, a site that enjoys dungeon crawlers like this, it would probably not get dinged for it.
Yeah. Hell, man, I wish I could have, like, if I was writing this for the other site that picked me up, I'm going to pimp them right now. It's called anothercastle.com.
Oh, yes.
They don't have a score. They don't put scores on the review, so, like, it would have been fine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I would have said the exact same thing.
Right.
But it still would have been relevant, and those who were reading would be like, okay, I understand that, and then they wouldn't have been, but you scored it too low. You know, or the person who you know, thinks that a 6 out of 10 on GameSpot is fair, so they're like, I'm willing to give a fair game a shot, and they say, you rated it too high. It's not fair. It's unfair.
Yep.
But yeah, this game on Wii, I'm curious to see how these niche games are doing on Wii, because it's like, you know, every time I see something like, so a quote hardcore game on Wii, I'm like, okay, good. But every time I see a game that's so niche that it goes past even the hardcore, like even amongst people who play games a lot and feverishly, like, this is the type of game that would turn them off too.
Yeah.
So it's just like, it's kind of like when they put Evolution on GameCube.
They did, right?
I think that they put the Evolution game again, and didn't you? You had that for Dreamcast, right?
Yeah, I still have it. Thought about that second device.
The what?
The world, the second device.
Oh, because the way you said it, you're like, the world, the second device.
That's what I thought. The world, the second device.
Is that how they say it?
No, that's how you said it.
Remember? No, that's how I heard you say it.
Yeah, but
is that when I said it before when you had the game?
Yeah, way long time ago. The world, the second device.
I don't remember this.
But it was mad years ago.
I'm glad I did that, because it sounds funny.
Yes, it does.
The world, the second device. Well, it sounds like... never mind. Let's move on. I think you want to read this and laugh ha-ha.
Yeah, I kind of do. But I laugh ha-ha to myself and to everybody else.
Fuck all y'all!
This is an article from Kotaku written by Mike Fahey about... Fahey! Regarding the Frostmourne sword that we discussed a couple of episodes ago that I said that I was going to consider buying for collector's purposes... title of this article is Frostmourne for $379 seems cheap now. I sent it to the podcast with the title, is there any question to the potential value of the Warcraft sword? And it goes as follows.
I was hoping you'd actually buy the thing.
Yeah, I know. I don't have the money for that thing right now. But anyway, those of you who railed against the $379 price tag for the Epic Weapons official replica of the cursed World of Warcraft sword Frostmourne might want to reconsider after seeing what folks paid for a chance at the first 100 numbered weapons. 1,012 users paid the non-refundable $429 entry fee for the auction. That's $434,148, with the top 100 bidders in order receiving swords 1 through 100. The top bidder, $20,700, over 54 times the price of the sword. Suddenly, the prospect of gathering up $379 doesn't feel so daunting anymore.
Well, Oh, this is something that I didn't understand. I didn't even read the original article carefully enough, I guess. I thought that they were just all selling them for $379.
No, no. They're selling them for $379, but only the first 100 were going up for auction with a $429 entry fee.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the end of the article, it says, sure, it won't be the official number one Frostmourne, which would probably be like in and of itself. The guy paid $20,000 for it, but wait long enough, he probably wind up making like $1 million off of that thing. Not $1 million, but maybe $100,000. But anyhow, but I trade a giant foam hand in my imagination for $20,700 any day of the week.
Wow, so this begs the question how much the 379 version would cost, would go for in the future. Like, I'm trying to think how that would scale.
Because
if, I don't know. I mean, I have the Command and Conquer. I think we got the first 10,000 copies of Command and Conquer from, like, Command and Conquer 3 from Circuit City, and I'm just kind of like, maybe I should take care of the box now. But I don't know how much I care. You know what? Let's take a trip down eBay lane. Let's see. eBay.com.
Like, so many collector's editions of things that are, like, destroyed. Like, I have the Sonic, 10th anniversary or something like that with Sonic Adventure 2 Battle. That box is destroyed. But I think it has something in it that I might have touched once. Oops.
But Command and Conquer 3 Windows. I tried to put numbered in the description, and it doesn't show up on eBay, so I guess they're not selling the numbered copies of Command and Conquer. It's 10,000 of them, and it's just a stupid box. Yeah. Let's see. Frostmourne. Real WoW Frostmourne miniature and Murloc suit code.
Oh, that's
what is that?
Something for the game. They're probably not selling the swords yet because they haven't gotten it.
Oh, okay. You want to know how much this real WoW Frostmourne miniature and Murloc suit code is?
Yeah.
$800.
What? That I don't even want to ask.
Let's see what, because I have no conception of what this game, what this stuff is. So. Hi, I have some gorgeous stuff. It's a set of WoW merchandise. One, real Frostmourne miniature of WoW. This is real thing, but it's blade not sharp. Not danger. Two,
okay.
Murloc suit code. No, I think this person just doesn't know English. But, okay, it's a miniature of the Frostmourne.
Right, it's not the sword that they're selling.
But, it's blade not sharp. Not danger.
Exactly, not danger. You can have a round kid.
Have a round kid? Two, Murloc suit code card, 2007 from BlizzCon.
Oh, it's a BlizzCon card.
Oh.
So that means that you'll never get it anywhere.
All right, so that's why it's only for $800. Well, let's hope that your endurance with your current job allows you to afford such things, because they need to be paying you better for what you do, especially in light of this guy. Coming up next. This is from The Consumerist. This guy is also a tech support dude, but he's obviously much worse than our very own Antipode.
Mm-hmm.
Because it says, Comcast tech abuses power to wreak vengeance on Xbox hackers. DSL Reports has the story of an outsourced Comcast tech who was fired after bragging online about using internal Comcast systems to get vengeance on hackers, disrupting his Xbox. After annoying little twerps intentionally overloaded his Xbox with data, Mark Ribeiro, who describes himself as, quote, a Comcast Tier 2.5 support agent, which essentially means I'm one of the top 1% elitist agents, end quote, went to work. First, he identified one of the perps and found out he was a Comcast customer. Then he looked up the kid's info on the Comcast support system and called the kid's father.
Can I just stop right here?
Yeah.
That alone, I mean, that's what he did, but that alone will get you fired.
Yeah. should I read his actual typing, or should I just read the summary from from the Kotaku? Because I just like reading this douchebag's words.
Oh, read his words, definitely.
Okay. Anyone who hates packet flooders will enjoy this thread, and anyone who packet flood, be aware. As many of you know, I work for Comcast as a Tier 2.5 support agent, which essentially... I'll do it in the comic book store voice. I work for Comcast as a Tier 2.5 support agent, which essentially means I'm one of the top 1% elitist agents. I fix anything other agents can't. Thank you. I was playing Halo 2 the other day. This also applies to Halo 3, by the way. Went into matchmaking with some friends and pulled host. Not 2 minutes after the game started, I went into blue screen. Immediately opened up Kane and Able, which is a program that monitors packet transfer. I was getting pinged numerous amounts of packets, essentially flooding my IP and just causing me to lag out. I proceeded to block all the IP so that my connection could recover itself. I waited until the game was done and sent a friend request to all the people in the other party. Joined their party and proceeded to tell all of them that what they were doing is extremely illegal, when one of the kids caught a bright idea and decided to respond and said, "Suck my balls, fag, you ain't gonna do shit." This kid wasn't very bright because all it took was it only took me 15 seconds to figure out he had Comcast. There's a trick to find out exactly someone's IP without even being in their party, unfortunately. I will not disclose this. Shouldn't disclose this entire thing, otherwise he wouldn't have gotten fired. Unluckily for him, I had work in 20 minutes. This is where the fun begins. I proceeded to input his IP address into a program we have called Service Divisibility Portal, SVP for short, and it brought up his account, address, phone number, daddy's credit card info, the whole nine yards. Well, I decided since this kid was indeed involved in illegal activity, I'd give his daddy a call. I proceeded to tell his father his son was involved in illegal activities over the internet. He should have said porn. And punishment could be imprisonment and a monetary fine. He spelled monetary as M-O-N-I-T-A-R-Y.
Monetary.
And the immediate penalty was that I was going to have to disable his internet for a week, which is actually defined in our terms of use policy under abuse. Well, the father was furious, not at me, however, and this is
hilarious.
It's hilarious and also a little bit scary. He assured me he would take care of the problem. The father began to yell at his son. I then heard a loud smack, and then sobbing, and then cracking noise as if something was breaking. It occurred to me that the father had just beat the shit out of his kid, and the cracking noise was the sound of a hammer on an Xbox. I decided being the self-indulgent bastard that I am, I wanted more. I asked to speak to the son, and only then would I not temp cancel their service. So the father put the son on the phone, still sobbing, I might add, and I said to him, "Do you know who this is?" He answered, "No." I said, "Remember that guy you cheated some 20, 30 minutes ago and said you would pay? Well, guess what, son? You just did." And then he got fired.
Yeah. See, you know, it's bad enough to do that, to call like somebody after pulling up their private records. But it's even worse to do it at work where it's recorded.
Oh, wait. Wait a second. Check this out. He has an update to his original post. He says, "I just wanted to share my side of the story since many of you already know I'm talking about. The truth is there is no little boy. There it no angry father. There it no." That's great. "It was meant for reading purposes only and for the Halo 2 forum community to have a laugh at stupid XBL kids. I never thought it would receive this much publicity. Of course I didn't, and I would never release any confidential information about anyone. Someone posted a story about me and said some things that were untrue. Sorry to everyone, but like I said, the story was for reading purposes only. Nobody actually happened. It's a shame that this was blown way out of proportion. To recap on the situation, there is no kid, no angry father. Therefore, it makes it impossible for me to contact someone who doesn't exist. It was made purely for the H2F community to laugh at. Merely story, nothing more. Therefore, I did nothing wrong. All there is to do is, all there is to this situation is a lonely, single, middle-aged man who has nothing better going on in his life than to post an article with some random dude who posted a story in a video game forum. Like I said, it was meant for the only. Okay, basically, this guy just lied.
Maybe.
Or either this guy lied, or he's trying to cover it up, and he's doing a really poor job of it.
Yeah. But regardless, that story sounds real enough to actually happen. I mean, it's stupid enough to actually happen too, because I've heard of some crazy stories in my job of people who got fired for doing stupid shit just like that.
That's stupid. What's funny, he's like, "I did nothing wrong. All there is to this situation is a lonely single middle-aged man who has nothing better going on than to post an article." No, the guy probably gets paid by his publisher to post. Like, Kotaku pays on posts, you know? I mean, it's not like he has no life. I don't know. Brian Crescente is married, has a kid, and he runs the site. Maybe all there is to the story is a single, lonely little kid trying to brag about his Comcast. His Comcast shit. So, I don't know. And he also realized that he was posting them on Halo 3 forum, and he repeatedly called it H2F. And I'm a stickler for stupid grammar like that. So he fucked up. But yeah, there's a picture on the Consumerist of this really funny of this dude taking it off
face?
A bong and just giving a finger.
Yeah.
No, the one under it.
Oh, I didn't see that one.
Yeah, but this dude looks like he's standing in front of like a DS Lite or something. I don't know, like a real oversized DS Lite. Moving on. This makes me angry. Hopefully not too angry, but classic and GameCube controllers gimped from Mario Kart. Yeah. Okay, so this is from Kotaku, and who wrote this? This is Luke Blunkett. The summary is, class controller. Mario Kart veterans can let their thumbs do the driving with the class controller. However, players cannot perform certain moves with this control scheme.
Let me read the next one, though.
Nintendo GameCube controller. Experienced Mario Kart fans may also enjoy this familiar scheme, although some maneuvers cannot be performed. So, Al, what were you going
to
say?
Go back to what they describe about the Wii Remote and the Wii Remote and Nunchuck.
Oh, wait, that's down. Let me find it. Let's see. Now, they don't, like Al said, they don't say anything explicitly on the top about the Wii Remote and Nunchuck and it being gimped. So, the good news is that it's probably going to be fine with the Wii Remote and Nunchuck, so let me find it. Okay, here we go. Wii Remote controller, with or without Wii Wheel. Steer by tilting the Wii Remote left and right, or snap the Wii Remote into a Wii Wheel to transform it into a steering wheel for an intuitive, motion-based control scheme. Nunchuck controller. Steer with the control stick on the Nunchuck and use a Wii Remote to accelerate, perform tricks, and drift. So what I'll probably do is use the Wii and Nunchuck combination.
Wait a second. What you're reading doesn't specify how to do the tricks?
No.
Oh, let me shed some light on this. When you're jumping off of ramps and shit, you can shake the Wii Remote.
Yeah, to do tricks and boosts and stuff.
And you do the boost, and I think that...
That's probably what's going to be omitted.
...is missing, yeah. And it's like, I think a lot of people, like, remember when they were talking about, like, even in the Kotaku article, like, the writer, who is it, Mark Wilson?
Luke Plunkett. This one, yeah.
He was kind of, like, decidedly upset about the status of the GameCube and classic controllers. And a lot of the people who put comments on that blog were decidedly upset about it, too. But the only way I think that those feelings can be justified is when the game launches and shaking the Wii Remote provides a substantial advantage over someone who cannot do that. And I would hope that they would balance the game out such that, you know, doing those tricks is not necessary. It's an added effect, but I don't think that it's going to make or break the game where somebody who can't play shakes a Wii Remote and then they win over somebody who can play. You know what I mean?
Right, but, like, in all honesty, I don't think it'll break the game, but at the same time, it's like, you want to provide as many options as possible, regardless of whether or not it's going to gimp the game.
True.
I mean, even if it's not going to gimp the game, maybe someone does want to do those tricks, but he doesn't like using the Wii Remote, or there's not a Wii Remote lying around, so you snap in a GameCube controller. You know, maybe they want to do those tricks, so at least provide them a way, like, I don't know, jiggle the right analog stick, which is more like a nipple, on the GameCube controller, or something, you know? I mean, that's the whole thing here. That's why I was a little bit perturbed, because it's like this is one of the things that came up when discussing, like, all these control options and you know, the whole issue with the Wii Remote versus a traditional controller, and that either it doesn't have enough buttons or whatever. Now it's the reverse, where the Wii controller can do something that the regular ones can't, and that's fine, but, you know, it's something. These tricks seem like they could be something, and again, this is looking forward. I don't know this for sure, so I'm not going to judge it as a bad game or a good game, and I'm not. I'm just saying why people might be upset is because, you know, maybe, and it could also be that they're not doing a good enough job of explaining exactly what you use the Wii Remote for, like you just said.
Yeah.
So, you know, they need to explain that, and then they also, you know, in the future, they need to make decisions where it's like, well, if you can't do a certain thing, a certain trick, and if the trick gives you a speed boost, then there has to be another way to do it. It's all about options. Like, especially in a competitive game, this is, you know, when things can get awry. Like, things like Ninja Gaiden, okay, that's not a competitive game. You put it all on the touchscreen, that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
But the difference is, with the Ninja Gaiden and the DS, everybody has a touchscreen.
Right.
You know, that there's no way you can't have it. You bring four friends over to your house, and all you got is two Wii Remotes and two Nunchucks, and then they have their GameCube controllers. You know, if they want to do a trick, I mean, you got to have a celebrity deathmatch to see who gets the Wii Remote. You know? So I just, it's just a problem because of Mario Kart being such a traditionally grounded game. That's probably the only reason why people are in such an uproar. If it were something, like, completely new,
mm-hmm.
then, you know, fuck the class controller. Like, yeah, like, I agree. Like, screw that, you know. Like,
right.
they shouldn't even have to offer support in the first place for a class controller if it's a totally new type of game.
Right.
But
this
is a very...
It should be a Wii Remote and Nunchuck type of only type of game.
Right. But imagine if you were playing Smash Brothers and there was some way that you could waggle the Wii Remote to kind of do something special.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that doesn't necessarily break the game, but, you know, being such a, you know, knowing such hardcore Smash Brothers fans, at least one of you 20,000 people will be pretty mad about that. You know, so it's like, if you have a traditional type of game, you need to give the option. And, you know, hopefully maybe they'll, I don't know, maybe if it's just for, like, aesthetic value, then that's stupid. But, here we go. Players can gain additional speed by flicking the Wii Remote up and popping a wheelie when riding a bike. So
yeah, that's a whole different subset. Because, yeah. I mean, who knows? Depending on when the you know what happens when the game comes out and how people receive the bikes, you never know. People might wind up sticking to carts.
And especially when you think about this, like since they've gotten rid of snaking, mm-hmm. and everybody and their mother did snaking because they're super competitive like that.
Ugh.
Now they're going to do as much as they can to gain that competitive edge. So again, they're going to like fight you for the Wii Remote, and then you're going to be left with the game.
Yeah, just and you're wheeling the entire match.
Yeah, and you're going to be left with the game controller. And be like, shit, well, I can't do any of these moves, so I'm going to lose. So
that's game breaking.
That's what worries me.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, and I remember once when I was playing online with Shenlong Bo, he just snaked the entire course and beat the shit out of me and some other guy who was playing with him. So now this is interesting, and I'm a man about segues, so this is no segue. Penny Arcade are launching something called Greenhouse, which is their own digital distribution service. I'm not sure quite what to think about this just yet because I haven't really tried to see what it's about on the website. When I went to the website at first, it was down.
Mm-hmm.
It may be up now, but it was down when I first went, so I really couldn't see what they were trying to offer. But they're definitely what they're going to do is they're doing this because they basically want to retain control over their products. They don't want other publishers or services to, you know, try to finagle their way into more money when they try to release Penny Arcade's game. So they started Hothead and them started this Greenhouse effort so that they could take primary control over, you know, how the game gets distributed on PC. Is it coming out for Xbox Live Arcade? I think it is. I think
it is. They were talking about it like it was.
Yeah, so it's going to be kind of odd to see how that, you know, how that works. If their worry is about the control of their product, I wonder how they've talked to Microsoft about their product, you know, like what deal they worked out that they're okay releasing it over there, but on PC they want to make their own thing,
right?
But
then again, they don't really have much of a choice when it comes to releasing on XBLA.
Right. This is true. That is true. Yeah. Let's see. I'm trying to find them. Okay, here we go. Oh, being interested in ideas in a theoretical sense is one thing, but founding a new company is another. So why does Penny Arcade want to expand into digital distribution? Cabe says. He wants to know why we've expanded into digital distribution. Well, we needed a way to digitally distribute a game. And so, we thought, what better way than through digital distribution?
Oh my god, what a dick.
It's like, he wants to know why we're baking cookies. Well, we needed a way to bake cookies, so what better way than to bake cookies? He's an asshole. Mm. Then Chris asks, but why start your very own company rather than go with someone else? And Tycho goes, it seemed like the best way. Why not? Pause. And Chris goes, I'm asking you! okay, so he basically says, I think it allowed us to retain control the entire process. It's just a video game version of what we've been doing for a decade, which is to basically own the whole chain of events that are involved in us getting our comics out. It's obviously more sophisticated, and it's definitely fancier and more expensive to do for software, but the process is not that dissimilar. And so Chris says, oh, so this goes back to the early experiences you guys had where you let other people take too much control of your content and it didn't work out. And Gabe goes, yeah, we were essentially in the business of being screwed professionally for years. If we can avoid being screwed, we're going to do it. So I guess I don't know. I was a Penny Arcade reader for not as long as you were, Al, but like pretty close to the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what the history behind this whole thing was? Like they were getting screwed by the hosts who provided space for the comics or what?
I think it was. It's very unclear to me. I think I remember something along that where they were being hosted by somebody and they were having bandwidth issues. That might be what's related to it. They weren't giving them enough bandwidth to provide the comics to all of the people who were, you know, the growing population of readers. So they decided to I think they are hosting the Penny Arcade like themselves or something like that.
Right.
I don't really know. And then I think just with like the T-shirts, things like that, they've
now they have their own store. Right.
Yeah, they have their own store and stuff like that. So they've really just kind of learned from what happened long, long, long time ago, and have decided that everything needs to go through them in order for them to make the most out of it. And that's great.
That's a gift. Really like everyone should try to do that, only because it's like you don't want people getting screwed over with royalties and everything like that.
Mm-hmm.
Here's where I'm confused. It says, he asks, we know how this works for you and Hothead, but how does it work out for gamers? With things like Steam and GameTap already in place, why does the world need another competing digital distribution system? And Tycho goes, Greenhouse isn't an application by any means. It's similar to the store we have for posters or shirts or whatever. It just happens to sell video games instead. So you're not asking somebody to install the Greenhouse client and then keep it updated or whatever. It's just that as a fully independent project, we need to retain control from end to end. So what are they saying, that they'll send you a boxed copy?
No, I think that...
of this game? Because... and. Yeah, I know that's not what they're saying, but you go ahead. What were you going
to
say?
It seems like it's a store. You go to a website, and at the end of the process, you're going to download a game. I guess that they've already put security and have set it up in such a way that you can't abuse it. But it seems like what it is as opposed to ordering something and getting something physical in the mail,
it's kind of like
something and then be able to download it immediately.
It's like how I got Splinter Cell Chaos 3 and Chronicles of Riddick through, I forgot, was it Direct to Drive or it was something else? It was some online store that I got both of those games from, and I just downloaded a big-ass install file.
Right.
The only reason I question that is because I'm looking at the store now. I've just pulled it up, and you have to download a downloader.
Maybe the downloader is their method of control. And it's not something that's needed to run the game once you get it.
Right.
It's kind of like, what is that, File Planet, sort of. Maybe there's like going to be some kind of queue and security-ish type of issues that need to be sorted out, and that's what the downloader handles.
Yeah. I guess I was being very, very specific when they said there will be no application to install, because that looks like an application to me, however
that's
small.
That's true.
You still have to put it on there. But still,
I think
mean, like,
what they meant is, like, no application to constantly
to
be
run.
Running.
Right, right. Yeah, I was just confused. I think they should clear that up just in case people are just, like, they find this thing and they're like, why do I have to download this? They told me there's no application. It's just like, well, that's not the case. Like, you don't have to run it, but because they said this, people don't know.
Right.
Segueing into so gracefully our news topic, because I didn't arrange this in a segue-able manner. Six Axis discontinued. Yay, blah, blah,
Yay,
blah.
Yay, welcome to Shock 3.
Yeah, it should have been the first time, but whatever.
Exactly. Stupid lawsuits.
You know what's funny? Phil Harrison was the one who was just like, oh yeah, Vibration, that's the past. We're all about the future. It's all about motion. And then when the Six Axis was revealed to get Rumble and become the DualShock 3, on the one-up show, they sat down with Phil, and they're just like, so explain. So they just, you know, gave him this look. He's like, all right, what's the deal? And, like, completely candid, he was just like, we're in the middle of a lawsuit. What do you expect me to say?
Nice.
like he didn't go like, well, we reevaluated our position and we felt that, you know, blah 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 blah. Sony
no
feels that
speak.
You know, we should. Yeah, he was just like, literally, look, we're in the middle of a lawsuit. I couldn't say anything. What the hell do you want me to say? And that was good. You know, I mean, like, I've described him as a penis before, and I kind of regret it. I mean, he still looks like one, but I regret it because, like, you know, he's a good guy. I mean, he ran that business, like, pretty well. You know, he's behind Little Big Planet. And then he ended up leaving Sony over his beliefs over how they don't really, you know, how the Japanese arm wasn't really paying attention to community gaming. And so he knows what's up, and, like, you know, if he doesn't like something, you know, he'll be candid about it, and he ended up leaving. So he's a good guy. I just found it funny. It was just like,
that's pretty funny.
It's like, dude, why are you even asking me this? You know we were
in
a lawsuit.
I like the honesty.
Yeah, I like the candor. I like the honesty. Mm-hmm. But Six Axis gone. What are your thoughts, mister? I don't even have to put up with a Six Axis, and you are a sucker chupon because you had to buy one?
Ha 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 ha, P.I.R.
But my balls. let's see.
Ruckers.
This is Butt Ruckers. This is for Tony, who is not here. But Mercenaries 2 finally has a release date.
Yay!
So, yeah. Or whatever he'd say or something like that. Let's move on because he's not here. Here we go. Stephen King weighs in on violence, on video game violence. And this is actually kind of refreshing. This is from this is pointed out by Kotaku by Owen Good.
Oh, new guy.
Erp. And he basically this is basically an op-ed that he wrote for Entertainment Weekly, talking about games and violence and how. Well, let's read this. Let me read this. I'll go to the actual op-ed itself and pick out some key phrasings. Let's see. So he says, this is a two-page editorial. And, you know, he outright admits, he says, I'm no fan of video games. I gave up on them in the early 80s, you know, when my kids used to beat me at Pitfall. A typical adult has no time to get into, like, amassing points and side quests and all that shit, and, you know. So he says, no, video games are not my thing, nor am I some sort of raving political nutcase. But when I heard about HB 1423, which happens to be a bill pending in the Massachusetts state legislature, I still hit the roof. HB 1423 would restrict or outright ban the sale of violent video games to anyone under the age of 18. Which means that, by the way, that a 17-year-old who can go and see Hostel Part 2 could be forbidden by law from buying or renting the violent but less graphic Grand Theft Auto San Andreas. According to the proposed bill, violent video games are pornographic and have no redeeming social merit. The vid critics claim they exist for one reason and one reason only, so kids can experience the vicarious thrill of killing. Now, what does and doesn't have social merit is always an interesting question, one I can discuss for hours, because he's Stephen King. But what makes us crazy, what makes me crazy, is when politicians take it upon themselves to play surrogate parents. The results of that are usually disastrous, not to mention undemocratic. One of HB 1423's co-sponsors says, I think this legislation is a good idea. I don't want this constant barrage of violence on young minds and for them to think it's all right. It's a good point, except that to me it seems that the games only reflect violence that already exists in today's society. I want to point out that games like movies have a rating system. Ones with a big M or an A in a box mean not for you, baby brother. What else does he say? I think the last paragraph is a pretty interesting one. He just comes out and says, what really makes me insane is how eager politicians are to use the pop culture, not just video games, but TV movies and even Harry Potter as a whipping boy. It's easy for them, even sort of fun, because pop cult always hollers nice and loud. It allows legislators to ignore the elephants in the living room. Elephant one is the ever-deepening divide between the haves and have-nots in this country. It's pretty funny. A situation guys like 50 Cent and Snoop have been indirectly rapping about for years. Elephant 2 is America's almost pathological love of guns. It is too easy for critics to claim falsely it turned out that Cho Sung-hui, the Virginia Tech killer, was a fan of Counter-Strike, which we all found out that he wasn't. Or whatever. I just wish to God that legislature were as eager to point out that this nutball had no problem attaining a 9mm semi-automatic handgun. Cho used it in his rampage that resulted in a murder of 32 people. I'm dyslexic. But if he had stuck to nothing but a plastic video game gun, he wouldn't have even been able to kill himself. So, this is not news. No. But I think that, I mean, however much or little it helps, I personally think that it's best to get as many mainstream figures to show that they understand what this medium is about. You know, 'cause someone like Stephen King... if someone like Jeff Keighley speaks out, the one who had no argument against Cooper Lawrence because the TV channel shut him off. If someone like him talks about game violence, they're just going like, oh well, he's a gamer. He doesn't matter. He's one of those people in the basement. Look how pale he is.
Exactly.
Someone like Stephen King talks out and he says literally, look, I don't even like video games that much, but like, ease up. You know, although, you know, maybe it might not help the fact that he's actually, you know, Stephen King and he writes bloody books and, you know, they might be like, oh, he's, you know, he's just concerned about the safety of his books. And I'm, you know.
Yeah, but.
He is. And he should be because, yeah. You know, they're attacking all media. Go ahead.
Oh, because they're attacking all media. I was going to say because, you know, what effect would video games have on his books that he's been writing for long time, and no one said a damn thing about it. They're books.
Right. I was just going to say that, like, you know, one victory for the government or the politicians going after the medium, one victory is just one step closer to what are they going to go next?
Yeah.
You know? Although that's kind of backwards.
I think it would be hilarious to see politicians go after books. And they're going to be like, oh my goodness, these books are going to pollute these children's minds. And you're like, children hardly read in the first place.
<That's true.
laughs> You know,
well, now they have to because you made them read because you took away the games.
You know?
But I mean,
which is
I'm
a
just
step forward, actually, kind of. Yeah. But let's not.
You're like, yeah, don't say that, don't say that. But I'm glad that, you know, he pointed out the hypocrisy behind the whole hostile thing. It's something that we've been saying for episodes and episodes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, again, a mainstream dude saying this is, you know, a relief, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know what also is controversial? Segue! Or not. It's not controversial at all. I just thought it was interesting. Echo Chrome is coming to the U.S. as a download only, so you can't buy the UMD.
Right.
I mean, you can if you
import it.
But if you want to get it in the States, you can only download it. I'm wondering why they're doing this.
I heard something about them not doing it because they don't think it's going to sell and that they'll be wasting money on a UMD.
Maybe. That might be a case. I mean, I saw some gameplay video of it, and it looks fascinating, like absolutely fascinating. But I guess, I don't know, this is, I believe, supposed to be, okay, this is both a PlayStation Network and a PSP game.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously it's going to be downloadable for your PS3.
Right.
And you won't buy the disc box. But then for the PSP, I guess, right, there's nothing much to say about this except I'm curious to see, you know, it would be cool if they did a cross-platform version where you could, and of course they would, you know, not make money this way, but I mean, I think it would be cool. If you download the PlayStation Network version, but you could also play it on your PSP.
Right, with the download play or whatever.
Not just the remote play, mm-hmm. but like you could actually transfer it.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Is that something that's not currently capable or not something that's not currently featured on PS3 to PSP?
I think you're able to get PlayStation 1 games on your PSP via the store, and you have to transfer them over.
Right.
But I don't think, unless there's an update that I missed, I don't think that you're able to play those same PS1 games on your PS3. You have to separately download a PS1 game that's specifically made for the PS3.
Got it.
So you might have two copies of Siphon Filter running around. For example.
Mm-hmm.
Again, someone please correct me if I'm wrong. I haven't checked the store in a long time. So just let me know if you're able to, if they now let you play PlayStation 1 games cross-platform. But, you know, I think that would be cool. Like, it's a great opportunity to do that because if the game is already coming out on both platforms separately, why not just try to make it so that, you know, you can do it cross?
Right.
Because I really, maybe I'm underestimating people, but I doubt that people are going to get two copies anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So you might as well give them the option, you know.
I don't know where I'm seeing it. Doubt people are going to get one copy. But that could just be, you know, it's because it's something that's not known.
Right.
It's not like, you know, Metal Gear Solid Chrome.
Metal Gear Solid Chrome?
I don't know.
But I think that's also an option that, well, maybe not. I was going to say it's an option that Nintendo should try to explore with WiiWare. But games like, you know, a game like Echo Chrome is... The way it looks, it's not that hard to get it on the PSP. If you tried to put My Life as King on the DS, you know, you'd have to downgrade everything so you couldn't make that cross playable. And plus, they don't have a memory card, you know, for the DS, so you can't really slap it on there.
Not yet.
You know, so not yet.
Yeah, because I mean, you know, the communication is of course possible. They already have like Pokemon where it communicates with the DS,
yeah.
and you upload to the Wii.
Yeah. The communication is possible, yeah, but the memory that they need to store that shit in there,
yeah.
you know, not too ideal.
Right.
But, here's more Wii news, because that was a great segue. Sam and Max coming to Wii.
Yay.
The headline is Sam and Max official on Wii. Now, I have Game Tap, so I'm probably going to play it there, because
mm-hmm.
it's going to end up being free because I have a subscription.
Exactly.
But it's something that I hope starts a trend of more point-and-click adventures coming back, and specifically on consoles like Wii.
Yeah, because it really works out that way. You don't have to worry about moving a slow-ass cursor with a controller.
Right, right. And more so on DS, too. I want to see them bring them out on DS as well. I mean, there's a whole trio of... Here comes the cat again. There's a whole trio of broken sword games on the Game Boy Advance.
Right.
And it's like, why don't you, you know... This is Nintendo we're talking about. This could be really easy money for them. Just port it up.
Yep.
You know?
And just add some touchscreen.
Let's see how they're doing it. It says, the perennial rumor has finally come true. Sam and Max Freelance Police are going to be busting punks Wiimote style. Telltale Games has announced that the first season of their episodic point-and-click adventure series will be compiled onto a Wii disc and fired onto retail shelves this fall. Okay, so they're gonna put it all into a disc.
Mm-hmm.
Sam and Max will be published in the U.S. by The Adventure Company and in Europe by Joe Wood. I wonder if... And this means that they need a hard drive. But I wonder, you know, if they get a hard drive. What this means for... What were you going to say?
You're wondering if they're going to do DLC?
DLC, yeah, for WiiWare. I mean, if... right now, I don't think they are, obviously, because, like, again, they don't have the stupid hard drive. But, you know, if they were to develop something, this would be prime for that, actually.
For Sam and Max, you mean?
Yeah, something like Sam and Max that's episodic.
Right, yeah. The only thing I see that... that DLC is going to be useful for right now for WiiWare, in general, is going to be add-ons, like with My Life as a King. You can add on certain things that are non, you know, essential, sort of.
Well, yeah, they're also doing it because My Life as King initially is a small game anyways.
That's true.
So that's why they're doing it. I mean, it's like WiiWare is supposed to be for these smaller games that, you know, aren't retail discs. Their games are cheaper, but they're not old NES ROMs, basically. Mm-hmm. So they had to have a new quote store end quote for that type of stuff. And again, I think that something like a Sam & Max would be perfect for that as an episodic game.
That's true.
Because they're smaller in general, and it kind of feeds into the culture of downloadable content, like where it's, you know, it's not a big thing, so you don't really have to go out to the store to get a big disc. You know, you can just kind of stream it in and get rid of it when you're done.
Right. Like a TV episode.
Right, exactly. And I think it's something that would probably help Nintendo establish exactly what WiiWare is all about. If indeed they're trying to present it as a downloadable service that's, you know, that is not the same, of course, but, like, you know, very similar to these other efforts where people are just like, oh, so you mean I can log on to my Wii? And I'm talking about casual gamers here who don't really pay attention to Xbox Live, but they can say, I can log on to my Wii and I can get this really small thing and I'm going to get a new one every 3 weeks. That's pretty cool, you know? Mm-hmm. And so they buy into that concept. But I guess they can't do it without a hard drive.
Yes, no. But maybe they could. You never know. I mean, if you're going to remove the shit and go to the next one, maybe
what I'd like to see them do is, if they're not going to offer a hard drive, at least find some way to securely make it playable from the SD card. I realize that what they don't want to do is... Why is Splinter Cell still $18 on Steam? I realize what they don't want to do is to say, you know, okay, you can play from the SD card, and then people start swapping ROMs.
Right.
They start swapping SNES ROMs that they downloaded off of Virtual Console. I completely understand that, but I think, you know, they should try to find a way...
And I don't think it's hard. They already do it with with Xbox Live. You can take your profile, like, onto somebody else's stuff. Or I think you can actually save the games onto a memory card and bring it to somebody's house, and you can't play it unless you sign in.
Right. I'm thinking that maybe it's an issue with the technology, but at the same time, you can stream MP3s directly from your card, right? In Excite Truck?
Yeah, in Excitruck and in the photo channel.
Yeah, so you stream it directly off the card. So I don't know if it's an issue of accessing, you know, if you load up the game directly from your card, or maybe it takes a little bit longer to load up into... I'm assuming that they take the ROM and they load it into the Wii's internal RAM.
Oh, they have to. I mean, I don't see any kind of loading still, you know, even though it's all flash-based and whatnot. I think that everything is small enough to fit into the memory, especially in Nintendo ROMs.
All right, so if that's the case, then I think what they could do is get the game on the card, you know, schlep it over from the card temporarily and put it in RAM, and you're fine. You don't have to access the SD card anymore,
mm-hmm.
obviously, so they can do it. You know, and then they put in some sort of hidden token somewhere, like a serial number that's encrypted and you can't, or something that you can't hack, because I can't put my Virtual Console games on your Wii, right?
Nope.
Right, so they already have that figured out. Yep. Just use that same kind of technology or mentality to be like, okay, you can't cross play. And I'm willing to forgive the fact that I can't play my shit on your console if they'll just let us play it from the card anyways.
Yeah,
and save us a little bit of space.
Mm-hmm.
But speaking of downloadable games,
segue.
Steam apparently has, and I don't know if this is news or not, but it is to me. Apparently, you can get a whole ass load of new games from different publishers now.
Mm-hmm. Ubisoft,
and Epic. Two, you know, I wouldn't have expected those guys to go on this store yet.
True.
So they're offering Far Cry, mm-hmm. BioShock is a Take-Two game, so Take-Two's already been on there, but. Far Cry, Splinter Cell, And Splinter, this is the original Splinter Cell now, and it's still selling for $18. Far Cry is $9 today.
Really?
So if you, yeah. Assassin's Creed is available for pre-purchase. It's going to come out on the 9th for PC for anyone who's been waiting for the PC version. And then Epic is offering Unreal Tournament 3 right there. I don't know why. I just feel like they wouldn't have offered them. And I just it just seems like something that they wouldn't have done because they're like, oh, we want to keep control over this stuff, but
maybe they're
doing
getting a good deal out of it.
Yeah, perhaps. You can get, let's see, BioShock is $30 if you haven't gotten it yet, so jump on that. But I think the whole world's jumped on that, so they'll probably
except
ignore
for
that.
Me,
except for you, that's okay. And that is it for the news. We have an interesting topic. Courtesy of Al Joe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my friend Joe. I hope he listened to last week's podcast. I did tell him. So hopefully you listen to this one too.
Send us a question! Send us questions! Alright, so we're going to be back with our main topic. At the main poopic, and this is an interesting one again from Al's friend Joe. It says, "Are all video games doomed to irrelevance?" This is actually a blog post on the globeandmail.com. It's a Canadian publication. This is by Chad Sep. I'm not sure how to pronounce his name. Sorry if I butcher it. Chad Sapieha. It's
the
spelled
Impaler.
SAP. Chad the Impaler, Vlad the Impaler. So yes, that is the blog's title is Controller Freak, and I guess this is a new blog that we can come to. So he says, he basically starts out saying, if The Godfather had debuted in 2008 rather than 1972, it almost certainly would have received reviews that were just as rave as those it earned 35 years ago. Ditto for a classic novel like Leo Tolstoy's War and Peace. But would Super Mario Bros. Had been released today rather than in 1985, would it still have become the phenomenon that it was 23 years ago? I don't think so. We still have fun with it, but that's partially because we see the game through a nostalgic lens, remembering the good times we had with it as kids. It's all because we also have context. We know what it was. We know what was expected of games at the time it was originally released, and marvel at how greatly this particular game exceeded those expectations. If evaluated based on the expectations we have of games today, it still does fairly well. It provides a welcome sense of discovery and requires no small amount of skill, but released in 2008, it would be deemed too small in scope, basic in control, and simple in narrative to be declared a truly great game. So that's just about, I think we've discussed similar things like this before in the past.
Mm-hmm. We have.
But, I mean, I'm not going out on a limb here. I'm basically stating the obvious. For the most part, I'm going to say he's probably right. And the reason I say that is because no matter how much you stick an old school game in front of someone like me that I've never seen before and I still like it, you're likely not going to get the same thing out of a 10-year-old.
No way.
You're not going to get the same unless you start that unless you start that 10-year-old's gaming career with the old shit to give him a sense of history.
And it never had any sense of comparison, relativity.
Right. I do think though that the blanket statement that are all video games into irrelevance is completely false. Not saying that he's wrong or anything. Like I guess I am, but I'm not railing against him. Like it's a very good point.
Right.
It's a very good question, and I haven't read the rest of this article, so I don't know what the conclusion is yet. So perhaps we should do that.
Okay. Well, before you continue, there is a lot of explanation, a lot of helpful explanation, and supporting information in the comments.
Okay.
So let's just, I would say, kind of, well, let's go through pretty much the whole thing. It's not that long.
The comments or the article?
The article.
Okay, so let's see. Reason why games don't and perhaps may never have the same sort of agelessness as the forms of artistic entertainment is that they aren't judged on anything as enduring as characters well, he says judged, in parentheses, at least not primarily, on anything as endearing as characters, plot, or writing. Rather, they are evaluated based on elements that are constantly evolving within the medium, such as game design, play mechanics, and to a lesser degree, graphics. I don't know that this guy is seeing the picture here.
Not yet.
Okay. But, like, only... No, just from that statement when he's saying that they're not judged on those things, like, they actually are. By so many people, by so many critics, a lot of them are judged on the story and the characters and stuff. I mean... And a lot of that's primary.
Right, and I think it's because there are some games that put that as an emphasis on the primarily... The primary emphasis, right. Like RPGs, and yeah. You can't really have a good RPG without a good character's plot right. or writing. Writing, maybe not. You can have kind of somewhat shitty writing and still have a great game. Yeah. But, you know, most of the other games, like, you know, platformers and shooters and stuff like that, they don't do so much in the realm of character development, yet they can still be successful because of great game design, great play mechanics, and good graphics. And I think that's what he was kind of referring to, because he's always using Super Mario Brothers as an example.
Maybe so. It's just that I like from some people, like, you know, every other person, like, for every person who does do that, there's another person who says, you know, who's playing Gears of War, and they're like, you know what, like, where the fuck is my Halo? Gears of War has such a shitty story.
Yeah, he also brings up Halo at the end.
Okay, so let's see the next pair. I guess the problem I just have is when he makes the blanket statements, and I think that he's really not, you know, you know what I mean? I just
he's
like
not seeing the other side of the story.
Right.
He's only kind of focusing on.
He has. They're very good points in here. It's just like he's kind of saying like, oh, they don't do this. And I'm like, well, some of them do. Mm-hmm. But here, in order to be considered timeless, a work of art must necessarily affect its audience in a similar way and to a similar degree, regardless of when it happens to be viewed. Super Mario Brothers failed this test because those who play it for the first time today have experienced more modern games that significantly expand upon and outdo Nintendo's archetypal platformer. Everything Super Mario Brothers does well, its run and jump action, its hidden levels, its rewarding coin collection system, has since been improved upon by countless other games. We rightfully acknowledge and respect that it served as inspiration for later games, but we also must understand that many of these games have inarguably surpassed their original muse. Mario makes for an easy case. The advancements in game design and technology have taken place in the decades since the game first appeared are strikingly obvious. Let's look at a less apparent example, the Halo games. Original Halo was rightly considered one of the greatest shooters ever made when it was first released. Simply doesn't compare with the series' latest incarnation, Halo 3, which has undeniably improved upon the franchise's formula by offering a deeper multiplayer experience, greater variety of game possibilities, and more cinematic presentation. Of course, it can be difficult to get past our rosy recollections. My memories of playing Halo outstrip those I have of playing either of its sequels. But that matters little in the matter of timelessness. The question is whether players who are new to an older game will be affected by it in the same way and to the same degree as those who play it when it was first released. Well, the person who views The Godfather, by the way, Al, you said you haven't seen it, right?
No, and it's funny, because I was gonna watch it over the weekend, because it's $1.99 on demand, but...
Oh, shit.
It's like 4 hours long.
Yeah.
3 hours long.
I've never seen it either, so, like, we're in the same boat.
Mm-hmm.
But will the person who views The Godfather first time today enjoy it as much as its original 1972 audience? Probably. Hence, it's timeless, at least insofar as it appeals equally to at least two or three generations of moviegoers. Will Halo or either of its sequels be as compelling to players who encounter it for the first time 15 or 20 years from now as it was for us? I have my doubts. Each new game is driven by a need to exceed what was accomplished by its predecessors, and only the ones that manage this difficult feat are recognized as masterpieces. The fact that a primary criterion in our evaluation of a game is the extent to which it innovates and improves upon existing game design dooms these masterpieces to quickly become dated and eventually perhaps even irrelevant. This is another statement that I take issue with.
Mm-hmm.
There are quite a few games where their critiques say it doesn't necessarily do that much new, yet it's still a blast to play.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the bottom line. Is it fun to play? I mean, it sounds like he's saying that timelessness in games requires innovation. I think it requires, you know, just... Well, it's different for everybody, actually, I think. And maybe that's why it can't be timeless. Maybe. You know, 'cause
maybe
in the
movies are just that simple. That...
Right. Exactly. And I do agree with his overall, maybe you can't really agree with a question, but I do think his question is legitimate in the sense that, no, I actually don't think games are necessarily going to be timeless, mm-hmm. unfortunately, and I think that they can be, but they just won't be due to the nature of people and due to the nature of how the different preferences that people have for things. Mm-hmm. You know, like, for example, the reason why I would still play Super Mario Brothers today, throwing away the nostalgia and throwing away the whole like mentality of I know, you know, I actually do like older stuff.
Right.
Throwing all that out is, well, level 3-1 in Super Mario Brothers is completely different from level 3-1 in Super Mario Brothers 3.
Mm-hmm.
They're different levels. And if it's a well-constructed level, I would like to play that, you know? Like, if it's well-constructed, I would still like to play that level. 3-1 may be bigger, maybe vaster, and maybe more vertical in Super Mario Brothers 3, right? But but it's not the same level, you know what I mean? It's not. It's probably better, but there's still some enjoyment to be had out of the out of level 3-1 in the original Mario Brothers
because it has its own unique challenges,
right? And let's take a great example of games that really kind of, you know, I think could probably forego this. The ones that had the best chance of foregoing this, Phoenix Wright.
Mm-hmm.
They're almost all the same.
Yeah.
The difference is in the stories that they tell and the cases that you have to deduce, you know, the solution for. It's kind of like what I was saying about, I think I alluded to this about Max Payne and Max Payne 2 in my review. You know, it's like the difference is not in the innovations. The difference is in what new environments can we make. What different environments can we make for this player to go through now? It's different. It's like Beverly Hills Cop 2.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
It was the exact same thing,
yeah,
except
it's gonna
be
Eddie Murphy. Yeah, it's gonna be Taggart, it's gonna be Rosewood, it's gonna be Murphy, you know, maybe Ronnie Cox is out of the picture for more of it, but it's gonna be those three guys. Now, what funny situation can they fall into this time? You know, it's the whole thing of, well, it's different, you know, therefore you want to you like, you know, what the core of it is, and therefore you want to experience it again. So, like, and again, this is going backwards from Mario Brothers, but, like, that's why I would still play it. Now, again, though, I still think that if you put Mario Brothers in front of a 10-year-old today, he's just not going to accept it. Because he is right. A lot of it has to do with technology.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the issue I have with that is that...
Exposure.
Hmm?
I said exposure, because, yeah, you can have all this technology, but if somebody's not exposed to that technology yet, they may have a little more appreciation.
Oh, right. No, that's a very good point. Like I said, like if you started that 10-year-old off with an Atari,
mm-hmm.
and then didn't give him the NES until he beat Pitfall,
yeah.
and then didn't give him the Super Nintendo until he beat Mario 3, you know.
Yeah.
But I think what I'm saying here with his statement is that look at where games are going today. We are reaching a diminishing returns with technology and graphics.
Yep.
Okay. Gears of War, for all of its frameiness, looks fantastic. So, okay, let's say that Gears of War, let's say that the next generation of consoles, Gears of War runs at a smooth 60 frames a second. Stuff like Uncharted runs at a smooth 60 frames a second. Where do you go from there? After that point, you know, you lose all the the improvements in technology matter less and less.
Yep, and then it's content.
Right.
As Steve Ballmer would say, content, content, content.
Which comment is this?
Oh, Steve Ballmer.
Oh, Steve Ballmer. I thought you said there was a commenter in here.
No.
Content. Yeah, no, that's true. It is content. And then like then you have the thing where it's like, I might get in trouble for saying this, but the Wind Waker, and this is something that that people on the One Up Yours show actually asserted back when Luke Smith was still with One Up and was hating on Nintendo. He basically said that the Wind Waker will be timeless, and that Twilight Princess will not be, surely on the merits of its graphics. Because the Wind Waker looks like a cartoon. Cartoons, you know, we can still watch them today, but you take a look at an old, really old black and white film.
Uh-oh. This is what I was going to get at. I wanted you to... I was hoping you weren't going to say anything about it.
Okay, then you go into it. You go into it.
Okay, well, this is... do we
Mark
finish?
Rishon?
Did we finish the article?
More or less. I left
yeah,
out the last
did.
Three sentences. Yeah,
that's fine. Okay. So here we go. I'm going to go into the comments because...
Mark Rejhan
says,
yep.
I think movies are treated the same ways. A lot of people today don't care about silent movies or 1950s science fiction. You name it. Notice how most video games have evolved to the point where they're almost all 3D today, which is what you said. Very obviously... The pace of video game innovation has slowed down today compared to the 80s, Wait another 50 years and innovation in video games will become much more difficult as it has for movies. Gradually, timeless masterpieces may start to show. Think of the original Batman and the rebooted series Batman Returns.
Mm-hmm.
Movies keep getting remade over and over. Think of Star Trek Original versus Star Trek Next Generation. Many people watching the latter in the 90s didn't really care much for the original series. I am
William Shatner.
And see, and like a lot of times I don't even get those references because I never really saw the show.
Yeah.
Others have nostalgia, much like the original Super Mario Brothers. Moore's Law is going to slowly peter out, and I'm not going to even go there. Intel having problems with dual multi-core, blah, blah, blah. Just like 1950s when movies went widescreen, all movies from 1950 to date look very similar compared to movies from the 1900 to 1950 when there are lots of innovation
yeah.
from black and white to Technicolor, 43 to widescreen, all of the stuff, blah, 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 blah. Moving on. Super Mario is still being remade in new incarnations, such as on the Nintendo Wii. Adults are not interested in some of them, but new players are still trying them out. Much like Mickey Mouse, and this is where you were getting at. Kids love Mickey Mouse today, but probably would yawn at the 1928 Steamboat Willie.
Yep.
Just the early black and white Mickey Mouse cartoon.
And he was an asshole in that, too.
That's true. I wholeheartedly agree with that. And the comparison is the same. Games will eventually become timeless. The problem is we're still in a stage of rapid innovation, much like the first 50 years of movie making.
Yeah.
Games are just very young at this point, so it's kind of hard to make a statement like, well, you know, games are doomed to irrelevance. Maybe games are.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I do agree with the question as far as it pertains to now, but eventually that's not going to be a problem. I mean, that's one of the things why I'm kind of seeing, I kind of feel like he's not really looking forward and he's not really seeing the entire thing. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, it's perfect. The example he uses perfectly from like 30 years ago. Why didn't he bring up an example from a century ago?
Right.
You know,
it would be like, okay, if somebody watches,
be a Nickelodeon,
like,
you know?
Yeah, like a Charlie Chaplin film.
Yeah, it's just all so different. And the reason why I'm still kind of clinging to this is only because people, like I said, people prefer different things in games. Some people, yes, they will be looking at story and characters and you know. Gameplay standards, and thus you can have some timeless things because, you know, there will always be some great characters, there will always be some great stories, and there will always be, you know, gameplay mechanics that people like, and they, you know, they're almost perfect. But, you know, I think because movies are so short,
mm-hmm.
2-3 hours, and
yep.
games tend to be 6, 7, 8, 10, 20 hours,
yep.
some people are going to get tired of, you know, spending 20 hours doing, you know, this type of gameplay, so they're constantly going to be looking for more. I mean, I think the Wii is a perfect example of that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
People, you know, or not necessarily an example of people getting bored, but more of Nintendo saying, let's make some money. But it's like, well, now you've got this new thing where you can do some whole new crazy shit. What happens down 20 years down the line? Do we get virtual reality helmets? You know? So the content, maybe, like, I guess there's a difference between the content and, like, the technology outside of the presentation. And that's good. You know what I mean? Like, because the Wii stuff is new technology, but presentation-wise, the graphics are ancient.
Yeah. I got another comment here.
Okay.
When Daria Hance from Longview says, I think you have your errors wrong. The first Mario shouldn't be compared to something like The Godfather, but rather something more along the lines of Disney's Silly Symphonies, which is really, 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 really old, like 30s.
Right. That's a good point.
A more appropriate comparison to Godfather would be Final Fantasy VII. The graphics, like the Godfather's cinematics, are dated, but if you updated them into today's standards, the storylines alone would carry the franchises. That's why so many gamers have been hounding Square Enix to redo Final Fantasy VII.
That is
but
a very
even
good
if
point.
Square won't, those same gamers will pass on Final Fantasy VII to their kids and anyone else who will listen. That is exactly true.
That
you
is
don't
a
understand
very good
how
point.
Many people are just like, you know, Final Fantasy VII is that, this, that, and that. I'll tell anybody to play this game. In my personal experience, I didn't sit down and play through Final Fantasy VII until 2005, and I couldn't put it down. Was it because the graphics were, oh my god, pretty? No, it was the story.
Right.
And then they're talking about Bungie and Halo and Mario.
Da, 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 da! It's certainly a very interesting question, and I think, but I think that it kind of ends up being covered in all the other discussions that we've had about diminishing returns on technology and nostalgia, and all those things kind of roll up into one. I'll say this one thing. I think the oldest, maybe not the oldest, but I think the oldest movie that I've ever watched through is Charade with Audrey Hepburn and Cary Grant. I think that was like 64 or something. I could be mistaken, but it was old. And like, I could still watch that today. I could definitely still watch that today.
Mm-hmm.
But if you ask me to, like I said, besides the fact that Mickey was an asshole in Steamboat Willie, if you ask me to watch that again today, yeah, I would be like, he looks kind of funny. Why are his legs like, why is he bow-legged like that? I don't get it, you know? So, but I just think that it's so different when you're talking about stuff that you interact with. It's just so different. I mean, the arguments just go into totally different areas, and I'm done. My brain is is tired from this. Do you have any more remarks on this? What are your thoughts on this?
I'm looking at some of the comments, and people are mentioning things like Counter-Strike, Quake, and StarCraft going against the theme of the article because modern games not built on nostalgia are good to play. And
right.
There are people who are still playing them after many, many years of them being around. I think a lot of a timelessness of a game really does have to do with its replayability. The story really does fit into replayability because it's like watching a movie over and over and over and over again. If something you watch over and over and over again on a TV never gets old to you, like I could watch something like Fight Club for years and still be like, wow, this is great stuff. Oh, look at that part, you know? And, I mean, not like over and over as in that's the only thing I watch ever. But if I went into my living room now and popped in Fight Club, I hadn't seen it probably in about a year, I would still feel as great about it as I did when I first watched it.
Right.
You know, you can feel that same way. Like a lot of people, apparently, you know, they still play StarCraft. StarCraft's been out since 96. And they still feel the exact same way about StarCraft that they do, you know, that they did 10 years ago or 12 years ago. Then you have people who still play Diablo 2. There's people who still play...
Checkers.
You know, people who play, like, backgammon online. They're like, I want my backgammon. They're, like, furious about that shit.
I thought you were going to say, fuck you.
Oh, nah. No, people love their backgammon. You know, there are a lot of games that are timeless because they are great fun to play, regardless of whether they have good story. And that, in and of itself, is just enough to put as a point of, are games doomed to irrelevance? Well, if you consider things other than, is this game really fun to play, then no. I mean, then yes, they are doomed to irrelevance, because if I bring a game to a 10-year-old now that I used to play when I was little and they don't think it's really fun to play, then, I mean, that's also subjective. It's like, okay, you can't think a game that's really fun to play is an objective thing, even though, you know, a movie that you watch, a movie being good is not an objective thing either. But I think that the majority of the time, if you bring a game that was fun to you, that was just in general fun to play, to somebody who's a kid, it's going to remain fun to play.
Right. He actually responds in the comments here before it starts getting to a little troll or flame war. Some guy is like, you suck. But he goes, he says, I'm happy and surprised to see this conversation continuing. Again, I'm not going to try to counter any of your arguments, many of which are quite good and probably right, which is probably why he can't counter them. But in the interest of keeping the discussion on track, I'd like to remind readers that the basis of my argument isn't that game stories cannot be timeless. Indeed, I believe they had the potential to age just as gracefully as the narratives, he spells it narraves, of any film or book. Rather, I'm putting forth the notion that the evolutionary nature of game design makes it difficult for contemporary gamers to get into older games and enjoy their stories. I believe that average, read non-hardcore, players who start playing a classic game for the first time often get turned off by interfaces, control schemes, and features that seem clunky and dated when compared to these modern titles. Wrong! I think a lot of non-hardcore gamers get turned off by the complicated control schemes and interfaces that seem clunky and too complex when compared to simpler titles. I am so tempted to respond to this, but I don't want to go on for pages and pages and tell him why he's wrong. But, yeah, I mean...
This is also 2 months old.
Well, do Canadians tell date by month, day, or day, month?
Oh, shit. They do day, month. It is...
Okay.
3 days old. 4 days but, old.
Yeah, like I was hoping I was hoping that he saw the other side of this better than he does, but I guess he doesn't. I mean, how can you actually tell me that, you know, non-hardcore and you know, average players, I don't, you know, once you're a player, you're pretty involved in it. But like I don't know. I'm surprised and kind of disappointed that he went off and said this. He was just like that you know, he doesn't take into account that so many players today are playing Wii.
Mm-hmm.
And they're playing Wii because it's simpler.
Somebody says Deus Ex threat over.
Where?
Right, a couple of, well, close to the bottom. It's a really short one.
Deus Ex threat over. That's great.
Oh, man. That's the only thing
that was said. That was said. Deus Ex threat over. Yeah, here it goes. Alan Hall for United States tries Deus Ex threat over.
Somebody else says something like, "You're wrong. Super Mario Brothers is like the best game.
It's
ever.
It's the best ever."
Wait, yeah. Where is it? Wait, there it is.
It's near at the bottom. Yeah, I saw it.
Super Mario Brothers is amazing. Also, Halo 3 is Halo with a few new gimmicks. That's all. Stop failing up my internet.
MF from Toronto, Canada writes, please, here's where the trolling began. Please at least pretend to make an effort to opine intelligently on the subject. I think he has. He's missed a lot of things, but he brought up some good points on his own. But your point about nostalgia is off base, and besides, why not consider the films from bygone eras through a similar lens of nostalgia? What bothers me the most is the absence of a deep understanding of the subject you're writing about. You compare early era games to late era movies, which is exactly what we went through. You ignore a variety of games that do have this poorly defined potential you find so clearly evident in film. Half-Life has a massive community of fans and I think he is talking about the less hardcore players. These massive community of fans, that's hardcore. Yeah, he just wants to troll. But, I don't know. Now that I'm reading this again, his whole comment of, you know, he's saying that stories don't age. Okay, that's fine. But I don't, like, again, like you just said, you just went through saying, if gameplay is fun, it's fun.
Look at Candyland. Look at the game of life.
Yeah. People still play Monopoly today.
Damn right. Even though Monopoly does tend to evolve with the times, you know, they made like a stupid
Madden.
They made a Madden Monopoly.
I think they made some other one,
like a based on a video game or something. I know they made a Pokemon Monopoly, but they made some other one. Somebody told me. I was like, what?
Yeah. But it's themes. It's skins. It's not,
yeah,
you know, technology.
It's the exact same game. And, you know, they even made, like, a kid-based, you know, Monopoly Junior where the board is smaller, but it's the exact same game.
You know, here's the thing. The one reason why Mario, I think, and I'm coming closer and closer to thinking that he's using a terrible example now.
Yeah.
Is a better example would be Metroid, I would say. But I guess he didn't do his research. But Mario, okay, was so great because it transcended the technology. In terms of his gameplay, maybe not its presentation, but in terms of his gameplay, like everyone who you talk to who's a game critic says, well, the physics in Mario just feel right.
Mm-hmm.
They just feel right, and that's why it worked, you know. And sometimes people prefer the fact that you got a mushroom and you got a fire flower, and that's all you needed to worry about.
Mm-hmm.
Some people don't like having to fly.
Oh, goodness, yeah.
Though I liked it. A lot of people liked it. But other people might just be like, well, now things are too wide open. I just want to go from left to right and test my skills.
Yeah, you know? That's why New Super Mario Brothers did pretty well.
Yeah,
exactly. A mushroom and a fire flower.
Yeah, and the really retarded shell. That was a worthless power.
But make you die.
Yeah, but then you get to things like Metroid, which would have been a better example, where the technology really kind of did bog it down. You got lost easily because every place looked the same. Mm-hmm. You didn't have any exposition, so you didn't know where else to go. Mm-hmm. You know, you had to find secrets by way of glitches because they wouldn't make secret paths, you know, obvious. So yes, that is not a timeless game. It is not, and that's why they had to remake it.
Yep.
But like, you know, some of them, I don't know. Anyway, I've had enough of this guy. My opinion has kind of soured on him now that he said what he just did.
But he did mention Tetris, which was good.
Yes.
Like, somebody else mentioned Tetris.
Yeah, he didn't mention it. Someone else had to mention it for him. And then he's like, oh, yeah, no, you're right, you know.
Yeah, so people have been playing Tetris for 20 years, and it hasn't changed much. And although a lot of people have tried to change Tetris and have failed. Tetrisphere.
I feel like he's saying this because his daughter doesn't like Mario, and so he had to launch into this tirade about it.
Yeah, maybe. That was what he said before. He said that he kind of came up with this because of his daughter. Isn't his daughter like 3? Or
yeah,
is she older?
I don't know. You can't. Yeah, but I. How old she is, he can't base an entire article based on his experience with his only daughter.
Of course, because that's the only one person.
That's like one of the key sins that you can commit when you're, you know, writing something like this. Just saying, oh, this one thing. I mean, we talk about it all the time. Like, we talk about, like, you know, oh, we see problems with, you know, PlayStation and all that stuff, or we see problems with X or Y or Z. And then it's like, well, wait, we have to take a look back. We're all hard, you know, into our games. We got to look at the markets that we're not in. We got to look at, you know, the people that don't necessarily play games as much as we do, and we got to see how they respond to the system. Like, me railing against a hard drive for a Wii, like, most of the people probably don't care. That's why they're not coming out with one.
Mm-hmm.
Like, most of the people who have Wiis, they don't care, which is, yeah, you know, which upsets me. But, you know, that's I know the reason why they're not coming out. I'm still just mad at it.
Right.
You know, and this guy really – I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, this whole thing is – I can – you know what I'm saying? This whole thing kind of compiles upon itself because he says he's been thinking about the idea of timelessness ever since his daughter was born, almost 3 years ago. So his daughter's almost 3, so he hasn't done anything yet. He's just been thinking about it. So he's thinking about things he wants to share with her when she comes of age. But the thing is,
if you shared it with her, then there would be no problem.
But not even. He says he wasn't thinking of any games that he eventually wanted to play with her, which is strange given his job. Of course, he wants to, but he envisions the future of them playing contemporary games, but not any classics that he grew up with. But this is a case-by-case basis. I try and play games with Evelyn, and not really many work out. You know, I tried to get her into
contemporary.
Yeah, well, contemporary and somewhat classic. Like, I mean, she
oh, I see what you're saying. It depends on the game, not on the era.
It depends on the game. Like,
yeah,
she
yeah.
would love to play
Completely
Super Mario
agree.
Brothers. And she plays, like, new Super Mario Brothers and everything. But, like, her number one game, like, ever I've seen so far is Mario Kart DS. She'll play that game, like, 10-20 years from now, if nothing else came out that was, like, Mario Kart related that she really enjoyed, she'd probably still be playing Mario Kart DS. Is that bad?
Right.
Like, I mean, she's so good that she destroys me in that game. And I want to, like, put her up against Jerry. That's how best
Oh,
up.
The dude, the guy who plays like he made the game?
Yeah. And we were playing at Smash Brothers, and we had a blast one time a couple of weeks ago, and he has not changed one bit. But it's like, that's one case for me, but I could probably, like, maybe have a son, and if that son has the same kind of mindset that I do, that we're going to have a great time, a blast, playing all these games on a virtual console and a Wii and whatnot. And, you know, because I'm still going to have it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's exactly what we were talking about before. It's like, it depends on what you expose them to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's kind of a, not to meld this with the whole, like, oh, be a parent argument, like, with video game violence. But, you know, it's about what you let them play and what you want them to play. I mean, if this guy was worried about timelessness, if he truly was worried about timelessness and what he wants to do is have his daughter play the old games because he doesn't want to feel like they're old and whatever, then he put it in front of her,
mm-hmm.
you know? Start expose her to everything. You know, it's the reason why I was saying the 10-year-old kid is because you're assuming that the 10-year-old kid has already grown up with an Xbox.
Right.
Or a PS2 or something, you know?
And that's because their parents exposed them to that first. I know that if, like, I had a child who was, like, 4 years old, I would expose them to, you know, to give them an appreciation. I would expose them to something like Super Mario Brothers first and let them do their thing. Or, you know, expose them to something very small and very simple that, you know, that's the reason why they come out with all these, like, Powerpuff Girls games and shit like that. And they sell because the kids, they immerse themselves in it. And whether they win or lose, I guess, they still enjoy themselves. So
right.
You give them, like, a simple game, like something like, you know, Outrun or something. You know, let them run around and do that, throw the car into the dust a whole bunch of times. And then you throw on, like, Outrun 2. You know,
sorry.
Then maybe they'll develop an appreciation for magical star shower. magical sound shower. Exactly.
See, the thing is, and before I close this, because my brain really is hurting from this now, it's like, I do feel what he's worried about. Like, personally, like, for example, like, you can't stick me in front of an Atari 2600.
You can stick me in front of Atari 2600 any
day. Exactly, because you probably were exposed to that, and I wasn't.
Yeah.
The sad thing is that my first exposure was Mario Brothers and Duck Hunt, not Adventure. You know, you can't stick me in front of...
Stick me in front of Adventure.
Yeah. You could kind of stick me in front of Rogue, but now that I've played Sheeran, can't go back to it. But it's like, it's because some games, while they're limited by the technology, the fun to be had with them wasn't dependent on the technology. Whereas for other games, yes, it is.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, Metal Gear Solid, once you moved into 3D, you know, you had to put up with blocky textures and, like, kind of wonky cameras and frame rates and all that stuff. You know, once the technology improved, you got a better experience.
Mm-hmm.
Super Mario Brothers, the only thing that was, I guess I'm being biased here, but the only thing that was worrisome is the fact that, what, you had 8 colors on the screen, so what?
Yeah.
Still looked good.
6.
And, is it 6? Yeah. And the thing about it is that, like, you know, video games as a medium is entirely based on modern technology. So it's like they already started off more modern feeling than an old movie.
Yep.
So, anyway, I'm done. Are you? Or please feel free to go while my brain heals up.
Let's go to the mailbag.
God damn it.
Mailbag, yo.
Fucker.
Do you think they're still alive?
They've gotta be. They're the only team to survive contact.
All right, let's find them.
Pierce, you've got tactical. We'll follow your lead.
When do we lose them?
1900. Command said they'd be popping flares downtown.
Okay. Let's finish our recon and make that rendezvous.
We are at the female bag. Right now we only have one question. Let me scour the bag again. Come on. Okay, still one question from Digimatrix. Mm-hmm. Is it me or have there been so many recent games with disappointing stories that start out well, but really lose it and never go anywhere? They got a great concept and it could have gone places, but then just lost it. Like, you wish they could go somewhere, but they don't. Kind of like writing the same sentence over again, but he is. Army of Two, haven't played it. Time Shift, didn't play it. Black Site Area 51, haven't played it. Dark Sector, haven't played it either.
Haven't played it.
Have you played these games? That's what I want to know first.
Me?
No, him.
Oh. Yeah, have you? I mean...
Yeah, because, like, it's all about, like... I feel like this is all secondhand knowledge, so correct me if I'm wrong. But if you've played these games, let us know what the stories are like. But because I don't plan to play any of these. So many recent games with disappointing stories that start out really well but lose it and never go anywhere. I think that's the norm. There are a lot of games with shitty stories. There are a lot of games that start out well and go nowhere. I'm trying to think of I can't think of any egregious examples. Because there's so many.
Like, I don't know. I haven't. I don't really look into it that deeply. So I think that it doesn't have that much of an impact on me.
Well, I think the problem is more that they're games that whose stories don't really matter that much.
Mm-hmm.
Like he's saying about Army of Two and Time Shift. I think the Army of Two and Time Shift and all that stuff. Maybe it's the concept and not necessarily the actual story. But I don't know. Again, I haven't played those games, and if you've played those games, you write back and let us know what the stories are like. But if you haven't, then go play them. I would say we got BioShock.
Okay.
Here might be something like I don't know, Metroid Prime. Like. As great of a game as that is, like, the story, I didn't really get into it. I mean, there's not... No, that's a bad example. Metroid Prime 2, I'd say.
The story kind of... Metroid Prime 1 is not really a big, big story-based, like,
I should
narrative.
I should say 2, because, like, yeah. Like, I stopped
2
caring.
2 would have more of a narrative. But are you talking about across the entire franchise or across the game itself?
Just the game itself.
Well, yeah, Metroid Prime 2, I guess. I mean, it went somewhere. It had a start, a beginning, and an end. It didn't really lose it. I mean, it lost its impact because of the collecting, and it was just like, no real story is going to be like, go and collect this, go and collect that.
I think he's more talking about just the quality. Not necessarily does the story just collapse in.
The storytelling?
Yeah, like, not just the story itself, like... Like, that's where I feel he's coming from. Like, for example, that Metroid story that we were talking about, like, it finishes, yeah, but it just kind of... I'm not saying this is what I think of it. I'm just saying, like, for example, because remember, I skipped the whole middle of it because mm-hmm. I saw you finish it. But it's like the story just kind of gets stupid or, you know, jumps the shark or it finishes, but, like, things like that happen. You know what I mean?
Right.
Let's see. I really can't think of... The reason why I say there are a lot of shitty games is not because I actually can name them, but it's more like I don't think it's a recent phenomenon. I don't think this is news. I don't think this is noteworthy. This is not news. There are good games with good stories and there are bad games with bad stories. It's not. I would say it's probably better today with the big name games. Mm-hmm. It's better today than it ever was. Then you've got things like Assassin's Creed, where apparently, and neither of us have finished it yet, and I'm not going to spoil anything, but it's just the ending is a cliffhanger,
mm-hmm.
and we basically get no closure.
Well, hopefully, because
there's a sequel, yeah. but the you know
but you really don't want to be left there without knowing. Maybe.
Yeah, regardless of whether there's sequels or not, mm-hmm. you know, I think a good storyteller will give you some closure at the end of every game, mm-hmm. you know. Because this isn't a TV show. It's probably going to be a trilogy, if anything.
Yeah,
trilogies are all the rage.
Yeah, according to Dennis Dyack.
Yeah. But, like,
you have games that leave you off at cliffhangers that don't necessarily complete, like Shenmue.
Oh, boy. Yeah, we can't finish this, so we'll make up your own ending. Gears of War might be one, but it never really... The story itself was never, ever intriguing for me. It's more the backstory of it
mm-hmm.
that I like. And the story really doesn't go that way, too many places in the game. But again, I don't think it's a recent thing. I don't think it's some new phenomenon that we have to be worried about.
True.
Have you thought of any games that, like, that actually had good stories and then petered out in the end? Oh, Metal Gear Solid 2!
Oh, yes. Everybody's been talking about that.
Although there's a good subset of the MGS community that's like, actually, it's a genius game. It's a genius story because he just mind-fucks you and is laughing about it. And yeah. I could see the argument for that. But like to the average eye, it's just kind of like, now, this is really cool, and then it just got shot to shit. Who is this naked guy with blonde hair? What is this da-di-do-de-do crap? What is this? You know, what the hell is this? And then it just goes to smithereens. Resident Evil.
You know what? I think I'm gonna play that after God of War.
MGS 2?
Yes. Finally, after all these years, I'm gonna say screw the ranking. I'm just gonna go play it and understand what everybody's been talking about.
Katamari Damacy had a shitty story. No, I'm kidding.
He had a shitty story from the start.
There's always something about Castlevania's setup. That kind of is like, that kind of starts out somewhat interesting and then just kind of always peters off into, now we must kill Dracula in the end. Final Fantasy VII, again, this is not recent, okay? It's not recent. Final Fantasy VII.
Do-do-do-do-do-do-do.
It started out kind of intriguing and then just got convoluted for its own good.
Final Fantasy V kind of does that too.
Oh, yeah? Damn it!
Yeah, because it's like... You know, a story about a guy and his chocobo and stuff, yeah. and then he kind of embarks on this big adventure. And then by the time you get to, like, you know, fight, run around chasing Gilgamesh, you're like, what the
there are all
fuck
these random shits
doing?
That are coming in and doing all this stuff, yeah.
And you're like, okay, I guess it's something that you can, you know, you can piece everything together, but the story does peter out somewhere in the middle of that game.
Yeah, I get, like, just to emphasize a whole, like, recent thing is a farce, in my opinion. Just, like, I really do think things have just gotten better. I mean, things like, because they're becoming more... It's just like the other guy was talking about. Things have advanced, and so has storytelling mechanics.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the only reason why Army of Two and all these things stand out to him is because they were supposedly hyped releases that, mm-hmm. you know, reviewers said... that the stories kind of didn't pan out, and that's why he's got this impression, which is fair and fine. But again, it's not a new thing. It's just that these companies are trying to pimp any and everything with more and more marketing dollars now. And so things like Time Shift, which, you know, everything I've heard about it, because I have not played it, but everything I've heard about it is completely mediocre as a game. You know,
mm-hmm.
it was never that great to begin with in any aspect, including the story. It was just pimped out so much because Sierra wanted to sell this game. and advertising has become more sophisticated. So then you get more exposure to it, and you think it's going to be something great when it really never was.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just the same as I'm trying to think of a random game from like the PlayStation 1 era, like Azure Dreams 2.
Yeah, it made a sequel to that,
It was something. It had some really, really shitty voice acting. I think I mentioned it once on the podcast before, but basically, like this guy is like eavesdropping on this big, you know, big gruff guy, like harassing some other scrawny dude, and he goes like, "Hey, you! What are you doing here?" And it's just so horrible. But like a game like that would have never gotten top billing, whereas today people are trying to sell the shit out of anything they can. They would advertise that to shit. And then you'd think, oh, it's a great game. You're going to have a great story. And it doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
And it's shitty voice acting like, hey, you! But let's see. This next part of his question says, what worth do you give when a Hollywood scriptwriter comes to write a game? Like for Gears of War and Blacksite Area 51. I think there was one for Splinter Cell. Let's clear up something first. The Gears of apparently, the Gears of War writer, after she wrote the narrative and everything, it got neutered.
Oh.
So it's not her original vision. In the sense that, like, it got cut down or... You know what I mean? I think they really wanted... I don't... What I was hearing is that she set it up as, like, a decent story, and then they either thought it wasn't macho enough or it was too complicated or whatnot, and then they just cut it down. So, just to say that first, anyone who thinks that like that she was worthless, it's probably not her fault. Mm. As far as and then there you go. That's what worth you have, because you know someone comes and writes it, and then the game directors are like, no, let's change this. So it depends. If you give a Hollywood screenwriter enough control, then it could be good. But there's a lot of shitty Hollywood screenwriters out there.
That's true.
So I mean, like some of the better writers come from games. Because they have to sustain a story for 16 hours.
Yeah, and stuff. I don't know. I don't put any extra worth when a Hollywood script writer comes to write a game, because that's not what I'm buying the game for.
Right. And it's also they also just are so different in terms of mediums that a screenplay isn't going to work out the same way in a game. I mean, that's just it.
True. And then there are also games that are written by people who aren't Hollywood scriptwriters that are freaking awesome, like Phoenix
Bioshock.
Wright games.
But yeah, Bioshock.
Mm-hmm. Phoenix Wright. Those motherfuckers deserve an Emmy.
But it's like, a case in point, a Fox sitcom writer wrote Sprung, that really lame adventure game that came out during DS launch. And there were maybe like two or three really funny moments in there, and then the rest of it was just shit.
Mm-hmm.
So... It depends on how well the person knows the medium.
Yep.
You know. What I would before we sign off, what I would like to see is a good novelist write the backstory and the overall plot, not necessarily the dialogue, but the overall plot arch, because they've got 300, 500, 1,000 pages to work with.
True.
And you know, those are really writers. They're not writing, and so I'd like to see what kind of stories they can tell, and then someone adapts that, and then someone, you know, doesn't fuck with it too much, only enough to make it work within the game confines, but they have to leave everything else out. And I'd like to see that.
Mm-hmm.
So, but let's take care of some housekeeping. New on the site is a Final Fantasy X-2 review. That still just strikes me as absurd, the fact that it's 10-2, but yeah. There's that on the site, posted by Sophina K. Soon it's going to be coming a Hotel Dusk review from her. Some more pieces from Dr. Fish 62. And go to see... You can't see this. I'm sorry. Go to listen to Gameslaves Radio. Gameslaves.net. Gameslaves Radio on iTunes Music Store. Review them. Don't be an ass. Give them some feedback. And go to Dr. Fish's fishy blog called drfishypants.com.
Fishy blog.
And yeah, that's about it. Anything you want to highlight, Pode?
Nah, I'm not really much of a highlighting kind of guy.
Bitch. Alright, we're going to sign off for Al.
Objection!
For no one else, because Tony's gone and Slunks is asleep. Yes, I have been Chupon, Austin host, and we're podcasting from the balls. Oh.
the gangster. Yeah. Go ahead, girl, put some back with the megaphone.
While I stand up in the background and check up on. Can have the big bubblies, but no nipple. No areola.